everyone. My name is Grace Beatty, and welcome to Wicked Women, the podcast. On this podcast, I will be discussing with leading experts some of history's most infamous and maligned women. Within each episode, I do not look to excuse or dispute the wrongs committed by some of these women, but I do strive to bring a more holistic and rounded understanding of each particular woman's story. Step back in time and come on this journey with me as we discover the lives and legacies of these fascinating women. In today's episode, I will be looking at the life and legacy of Bonnie Parker, part of the infamous crime spree couple Bonnie and Clyde. Discussing Bonnie with me today will be Jenny Walsh, author of novels Becoming Bonnie and Side by Side, that provide a raw look into the life of Bonnie and Clyde, told in the voice of the woman who experienced it all.
You've heard the story of Jesse James, of how he lived and died. If you're still in need of something to read, here's the story of Bonnie and Clyde.
Perhaps some of the most recognizable American photos of the early 20th century. A young woman poses in front of a car with a cigar between her teeth and a gun on her hip. In another, she points a rifle at the chest of a man who stares back at her without fear. Bonnie and Clyde made headlines in a way few couples have before or will again. There have been films, TV series, books, Broadway musicals, and even a psychology term based off of their story. But as is too often the case with media celebrities even today, the real people behind the famous photos, Hollywood films, and power ballads are far more elusive. In addition, because of Clyde Barrow and Bonnie Parker's fame as a couple, it can be difficult to see or imagine the individuals involved in the 21-month crime spree. Bonnie herself has been called a criminal, attention seeker, murderer, romantic, and a modern Robin Hood. Today, she is far more of an American legend than a real flesh and blood woman. Bonnie Parker was born in Rowena, Texas in 1910 to a rural working class family. While the later years of Bonnie's life were known for being unconventional, it appears that her early life was similar to thousands of other rural Americans at the turn of the 20th century. Here is Jenny Walsh.
So Bonnie grew up very poor. Her father died when she was young, and she worked as a waitress to support her family. She had her mother, an older brother, a little sister. And from what I can tell in general, both Bonnie and Clyde were very family-centric. And being this very intelligent and creative young woman and having grown up in poverty, I believe Bonnie wanted simply more for herself.
When Bonnie Parker first met Clyde Barrow, he was already a young man hardened by the prison system. While family and friends showed concern for Clyde's changed persona, it appears that upon first meeting, Bonnie and Clyde were smitten. Shortly after meeting, Clyde was arrested, and after being paroled in February of 1932, Clyde left town to avoid further legal troubles. Bonnie followed him. In April of 1932, Bonnie herself was apprehended after a failed hardware store robbery and placed in the Kaufman County Jail. After her own release, as they traveled throughout rural America together, Bonnie and Clyde would eventually begin the crime spree that would go down in infamy. As Jenny discusses,
Bonnie didn't want that life of crime, and I read how Clyde wanted to buy land for his family, who was also poor, so they could all have this different lifestyle. But then, of course, he went about it all in the wrong ways, which was robbing banks. He was arrested. Bonnie was arrested. There was a car accident that left Bonnie in a coma, and she wasn't able to walk unassisted for the rest of her life after that. They were ambushed numerous times but escaped. And like I said, they were on their crime spree for 21 months. They were just running from the cops. And then eventually they were killed in an ambush that was said to actually have been set up by a friend. And Bonnie became the first woman, I want to say in Texas, but maybe even the country, I can't quite recall, who was killed in that manner. And I think that really sparked headlines. I definitely think the fact that They were young. They were both in their early 20s. It was a girl and a guy, and they were in love. I think all of that kind of creates this romantic notion of this, you know, couple out against the world. I mean, newspapers back then were cheap. They were so prevalent that people joked about calling them Hoover blankets as a way to keep warm. So people read about Bonnie and Clyde every day. There are so many instances that I read that Bonnie and Clyde would be accused of a crime across the country when they weren't even near it, because that publication wanted to put Bonnie and Clyde as their headline. They were definitely deserving of a lot of the headlines. Again, like, in no way am I trying to, you know, paint this, you know, woe was me picture of Bonnie. But it was interesting that things were escalated very much. I mean, you think of today with social media, and it was done back then with headlines. Once the crime spree starts, Bonnie is depicted as this gun moll and a murderer in many portrayals of her. But many believe, and I happen to be in the camp after studying all the anecdotes and diaries and first-person accounts, that Bonnie never killed anybody. Some say that she never even fired a gun. Clyde and the whole Barrow gang, they are a completely different story. They were responsible for 13 murders. It's completely horrible. But as far as I can tell, Bonnie never pulled a trigger that took someone's life. And I find that very interesting based on how she's seen today. There were so many first-person accounts. There was FBI documents. There was her sister's diaries. There was Bonnie's own writings. So I looked into all of these different, I guess, primary sources, and I read a ton of nonfiction, and it seems like that was the conclusion, that, you know, Bonnie was wrapped up in this world of sin and the Barrow gang who did horrible things, but Bonnie herself, while being an accomplice, in no way am I, you know, trying to give her a way out here, but she herself didn't murder anybody. I think she was very much in love. I also think she was very intelligent, but I can see her being naive to the extent that she justified Clive's actions. In my research, I also saw moments where Bonnie demanded things of Clyde. So she might have followed his lead, but I think there are times where she also pushed him to do things as well. So they ended up playing often like Joplin, for example. And I think Bonnie really wanted that like moment of like normalcy. Like, I want to stop running. I want to live in this house. I want to do my laundry, and I want to make meals, and I just want to feel normal. So that's one thing that I believe she pushed Clyde into. And then unfortunately that ended up leading into an ambush by the cops after they had caught wind of them. It's interesting though. I think with all the portrayals of Bonnie, I don't think anyone can get it 100% correct. And there's so many opposing views on both Bonnie and of Clyde. I mean, there are the newspapers that printed the false information, like I mentioned. There were people who gave inaccurate first-person accounts because they wanted their 15 minutes of fame. There were court records even of members of the Barrow gang that was in conflict with what I believe actually happened. And I came across an anecdote of how Clyde told his gang members to lie to the police and to the court and to anyone so that they wouldn't implicate themselves. So he basically told them to point the finger at him. And by doing so, it created these false accounts of what could have happened. So there are just so many false truths and half-truths. And so I don't think there can be any depiction of Bonnie to ever be completely spot on. When Bonnie was arrested and was in jail, that's when she wrote, I believe, the majority of her poetry. And, you know, she speaks about being betrayed. She speaks about wanting a different life. I think in that moment, at least in my book, that's when I kind of see her making a choice. Like, when I get out of here, am I going to stay with Clyde, or am I going to go back and try to start a different life? And she ultimately chose Clyde.
In the midst of their crime spree, photos were discovered during a raid and published that would cement Bonnie and Clyde as celebrity criminals. Photos of Bonnie and Clyde, along with Clyde's brother and sister-in-law, posing in front of a car with guns and cigars. In an era that saw a shift away from exaggerated cartoons and sketches in newspapers to photographs, there was a new obsession with headline-worthy photos. The shock, awe, and at times horror that came from photos of crime helped Bonnie and Clyde become recognizable in a whole new way.
And then Bonnie and Clyde actually have a syndrome named after them, which, you know, the Bonnie and Clyde syndrome, where it's essentially when someone is attracted to and obsessed with a criminal. They came up during the time where we were first seeing photos in newspapers in the 1920s and 1930s. So they kind of became these celebrity criminals at the perfect time to become infamous. It was the first time we were seeing faces in newspapers to go along with headlines. So they were known throughout the country. And it can work both ways because Easter one year, Bonnie and Clyde were in a car trying to sleep, and a officer came up, knocked on the window, and Clyde reacted and ended up, actually, I don't think it was Clyde. I think it was someone in his gang who was with him, reacted and started shooting and killed this officer. And I think Clyde took the blame for it. So along with seeing Bonnie and Clyde's photos suddenly in newspapers, you were seeing photos of their victims. And in this case, the officer who was killed on Easter was supposed to get married shortly after, and his fiance ended up going to his funeral in her wedding gown. And that photo ended up in the newspaper as well. So I think that moment in time, people really started to turn against Bonnie and Clyde when they were like, wow, this widow showed up at her husband or her fiance's funeral in the gown she never got to wear.
As the wave of public opinion began to flow against Bonnie and Clyde, an ambush was planned by the FBI for May 23, 1934. As Bonnie and Clyde rounded a corner on a deserted road, police officers and Texas Rangers came out from their roadside hiding places and opened fire on the vehicle. 112 bullet holes were found embedded in the car, and Bonnie and Clyde were both killed instantly.
Their paths crossed like two hot wires. They roared off on what might easily have been a wild romantic lark. But almost before they knew it, with the giggles still in their ears, they had bloodied up poor State.
Bang, bang, my baby shot me down.
Don't mess with Bonnie and Clyde.
Bang, bang.
The story of Bonnie and Clyde quickly became an American legend, but it once again erupted into the headlines with the 1967 film Bonnie and Clyde, starring Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway. Since then, they have continued to provide plot lines for cinema, television, books, and more.
I think with all these portrayals and adaptations, people just, they want to create something entertaining, and I guess because there is leeway, people take it different directions. I will say with my book, I tried to stick to the facts as much as I could, but there's so many moments where you have to speculate on, and I think that's where all these different perceptions of Bonnie have come from, the speculation. And a lot of those perceptions, I guess, are negative, but I honestly don't know if they should change, because she was this girl with big dreams for herself, and she went about achieving it in all the wrong ways. So at the end of the day, it kind of does shake out as being a negative one. They were in love, so that adds this whole other layer. during their crime spree, it was very interesting to me that there was quite a few people who actually rooted for them, because Clyde was almost seen as this like Robin Hood persona. Because as you mentioned, this happened during the Great Depression.
Whether it is a Robin Hood story, a fairy tale romance, or an out of control crime spree, a portrayal of Bonnie that comes through in many different versions is a woman dreaming of the limelight who is willing to do anything to achieve it. For Jenny, this was her earliest opinion of Bonnie as she began diving into the research for her books, but found a woman much more layered than seen on screen.
You know, it's probably similar, my opinion, to others out there. And I think that's because it was shaped a lot by pop culture. So like I said, I first remember watching the 1967 film ages ago and then kind of thinking that Bonnie was simply this bored young girl who grew up in poverty. Then she met this bad boy named Clyde Barrow and simply followed him into a life of crime. So that was kind of where I started with my opinion of Bonnie Parker. After deciding to write the novel from Bonnie's perspective, I began researching her background, and I wanted to understand who she was and where she came from before I dove into those singular moments of Bonnie and Clyde's 21-month crime spree. That's kind of what they're known for. Straight away, I was so surprised to learn that Bonnie was this straight-A student. She had won a countrywide spelling bee. She wrote poetry. She loved going to the cinema. I also remember that I was shocked when I learned that Bonnie had been married before running off with Clyde. I didn't know that she had been in that relationship, and it really shaped her outlook on men. I had always thought that Clyde was her one and only love. So I was very much surprised that Bonnie, prior to Clyde, was almost this good girl. And then we always joke with my publisher and I joke that she was kind of like the female Breaking Bad. I think I knew the Bonnie that was presented to me based on the research. I mean, like I said, I don't know if that's 100% who she was. I hope I got as close as possible. I will say, those who read my book do say it seems sympathetic to her. And I think that's because it's told from her first person account. It's not my opinion, it's Bonnie's perception of herself. And of course, you know, she has moments where she thinks, wow, I really messed up. But then there's also moments where Bonnie's justifying what she's doing. So it was a very interesting character to bring to life. I think she saw herself as bad quite a bit, but she got so deep and she wanted to get out the other side. Right before Bonnie and Clyde were ambushed and ended up dying, from my research, it seems like they had just purchased land to disappear on and stop a life of crime. So Bonnie basically gets everything that she wanted this whole time, and then she's killed. So it was, that was just very interesting to me. So I think that she really realized she was bad, but she was also fighting to be good again. I mean, like, and I've said this a couple times, like, the ends don't justify the means. I mean, none of what they did was good. But I think in her mind, she just kept pushing because she wanted to get through it. She almost had the happiness that she wanted. And Clyde, similar, like he wrote letters apologizing. He showed a lot of remorse. I think he's someone that went down a horrible road as well, got too deep, did horrible things, and again, justified his actions because he thought he was doing the right thing for himself and his family.
For Jenny, the legacy of Bonnie Parker is a complicated one. Bonnie was a woman who either committed or assisted in violent crimes that should never be justified. But the overconfident image of Bonnie, cigar in her mouth and gun in hand, staring defiantly at the camera, can show more of a naive girl playing dress-up than a hardened criminal.
I kind of see her legacy as almost this cautionary tale. I mean, dream big, but you have to go about it in the right way. I think it got bigger than she anticipated. I know in the film, the 1967 film, she's portrayed as someone who, you know, wants to be in movies and she wants the limelight. And I saw a little bit of that, but I also saw moments where Bonnie just really wanted a normal, simple life. When she was playing house in Joplin, they were there with Clyde's brother, Buck, and Buck's wife, Blanche, who was Bonnie's best friend. And there was this moment where they just wanted to take silly photos. And it's the iconic photos that if you Google them, you see, you know, Bonnie holding a gun to Clyde and having a cigar in her mouth. And they're all, you know, acting tough. And those pictures were supposed to just be for them and to be fun. And no one was supposed to see them. But when their apartment was ambushed and they had to flee, everything of theirs was confiscated. And of course, those photos were published in all the newspapers. And there's this interesting, kind of funny anecdote I came across where Bonnie and Clyde, at one point, they abduct an officer and drive him around and eventually like release him. But that was like their way of like controlling the officer from like, you know, getting them. They got him. And while they had, you know, kidnapped this officer and he's in their back seat, Bonnie ends up having this conversation with him where she's like, you know, that portrayal's not me. I don't smoke cigars. I don't do that stuff. Like, tell everyone that those pictures aren't me.
The story of Bonnie and Clyde. You've read the story of Jesse James, of how he lived and died. If you're still in need of something to read, here's the story of Bonnie and Clyde. Now, Bonnie and Clyde are the Barrow Gang, I'm sure you all have read, how they rob and steal, and those who squeal are usually found dying or dead. There's lots of untruths to these write-ups. They're not so ruthless as that. Their nature is raw, they hate all the law, the stool pigeons, spotters, and rats. They call them cold-blooded killers. They say they are heartless and mean, but I say this with pride that I once knew Clyde when he was honest and upright and clean. But the laws fooled around, kept taking him down and locking him up in a cell till he said to me, I'll never be free, so I'll meet a few of them in hell. The road was so dimly lighted, there were no highway signs to guide. But they made up their minds, if all roads were blind, they wouldn't give up till they died. The road gets dimmer and dimmer. Sometimes you can hardly see. But it's fight, man to man, and do all you can, for they know they can never be free. From heartbreak some people have suffered. From weariness some people have died. But take it all in all, our troubles are small, till we get like Bonnie and Clyde. If a policeman is killed in Dallas, and they have no clue or guide, if they can't find a fiend, they just wipe their slate clean and hand it on Bonnie and Clyde. There's two crimes committed in America, not accredited to the Barrow mob. They had no hand in the kidnap demand, nor the Kansas City Depot job. A newsboy once said to his buddy, I wish old Clyde would get jumped. In these awful hard times, we'd make a few dimes if five or six cops would get bumped. The police haven't got the report yet, but Clyde called me up today. He said, don't start any fights. We aren't working nights. We're joining the NRA. From Irving to West Dallas Viaduct is known as the Great Divide, where the women are kin and the men are men, and they won't stool on Bonnie and Clyde. If they try to act like citizens and rent them a nice little flat, about the third night, they're invited to fight by a sub-gun's rat-a-tat-tat. They don't think they're too tough or desperate. They know that the law always wins. They've been shot at before, but they do not ignore that death is the wages of sin. Someday they'll go down together, and they'll bury them side by side. To few it'll be grief, to the law, relief, but it's death for Bonnie and Clyde.